Chapter 19, Section 1, Stepping Stones. Manipulating the environment to your advantage is the essence of strategy. In the case of Fatango, we understood our competitive environment and that we were losing the battle in the online photo service business. We were losing this external battle because we had to focus internally on our parent company's needs, and that absorbed what little resources we had for investment. Alternative services such as Flickr were rapidly dominating the space. Any differential we had with the service was in image manipulation, but being a relatively novel act and uncertain, we had no way of foretelling its future. We certainly were unable to predict the rise of Instagram and what would happen next. This was 2005. We were also aware that our existing business with the parent company would eventually be caught up in their outsourcing efforts. In other words, I was losing the external battle and would eventually lose the internal one. The strategy game starts with being honest with yourself. You're not going to improve if you believe everything is perfect despite the evidence. If you accept this, then even failure provides an opportunity to learn. Strategy is all about observing the landscape, understanding how it is changing, and using what resources you have to maximize your chances of success. Obviously, you need to define what success is, and that's where your purpose comes in. It's the yardstick by which you currently measure yourself. However, as this is a cycle, your very actions may also change your purpose, and so don't get too stuck on it. Ludicorp was once a failing online video game company that shut down its never-ending game in 2004 and became a massively successful online photo service known as Flickr. It's worth noting that after Flickr, the founder Stuart Butterfield then went on to create another online video game company, Tiny Speck. Its game, known as Glitch, was shut down in 2012. As with Ludicorp, the founder had once again singularly failed to deliver on the promise of a huge online video game, but in the process of doing this for a second time, he had also created Slack, which is now a massively successful company valued in the billions. If Stuart had stuck to his purpose or focused on the core of online video games, then we probably wouldn't have Flickr or Slack, and we'd all be the poorer for it. Back to Fatango, I knew we had to act. We needed to free up resources and find a new path. I knew that such action would have to create a new purpose for the organization in order for us to have a future. I didn't know how much time I really had, how much political clout I could use to hold back the wolves, nor even what it was we were going to do. Somehow, we needed to find a way to flourish, as the unwritten purpose of every organization and of every organism is always to survive. Using our maps, we determined that creating a utility platform or infrastructure play was the best option, as there were established product markets. These markets were suitable for utility provision, and incumbents would have inertia to change. Both approaches would not only enable us to build a new business but free up capital through more efficient use of resources in our existing business. However, infrastructure itself was capital intensive, and despite our profitability, we had imposed constraints from capital expenditure to being both profitable and cash flow positive each and every month. However, I gambled that if we believed the market was about to change, then others would see the same. Some new entrants, such as Google, would play the infrastructure game. If they launched such a play, we could then exploit this by building our platform on top rather than just consuming our own infrastructure. The timing was going to be critical here. We could make enough savings from our existing business through the provision of our own utility infrastructure environment to initiate our own public platform play. To grow the new business quickly, we would need someone else to make that big infrastructure play, or else constrain our own platform growth to a manageable level. I had talked to the rest of the board, highlighted this future $1 trillion market opportunity, and bought enough slack, or rope depending upon your point of view, to do it anyway. The pass play, what you would call serverless today, also suited our capabilities because we had the skills required to build a low-cost, large-scale distributed architecture. This would also act as a barrier to entry for others. The nagging question was, who would trust this online photo service for their coding platform? By open sourcing the PaaS technology itself, Zimki, we planned to overcome many of the adoption fears and rapidly drive towards creating a standard. If we were lucky, then others would set up as Zimki providers, offering their own pass play. This suited us because our ultimate goal was not to be a pass provider but to build the exchange, brokerage and assurance industries on top of this. We had used maps to extend far beyond the obvious and speculated what was coming next. The pass play was simply our beachhead. Our strategy was developed from our map and our understanding of it. We would use both the landscape and our capabilities to our advantage to the best of our understanding. We launched, and shortly after Amazon, not Google, launched an infrastructure service known as EC2. We didn't care who it was, as we were over the moon. We positioned our platform to build upon Amazon's infrastructure. We rapidly grew and then we were shut down, in 2007. The parent company's outsourcing plan overtook my own. They did not believe in this space, this purpose. The future to them was not cloud, and I had miscalculated. I had enough political capital to get started, but nowhere near enough to stop the outsourcing change. I tried the usual routes of management buyout, even VC funding, but the asking price was either too high, the VC too focused elsewhere, or just too skeptical. You have to remember, this was between 2006 and early 2007. Investors wanted to hear Web 2.0, collective intelligence and user-driven network effects. Terms like compute utility and coding platform were just not something we'd invest in. There were exceptions, such as Bungie Labs, but as one investor told me, wrong approach, wrong technology and wrong place. No one has ever heard of a successful tech firm from Old Street, London. It was a cutting point, but fair enough. We were operating in a barren land with the barest whiff of tech companies and good souls. This was a long way from the heartland of Silicon Valley, though of course, Old Street these days is known as Silicon Roundabout. The crunch then came, and I had choice. Dismantle the service and the team, take a cushy number within the parent company, or resign. I decided to take the hit. Cloud became that billion-dollar industry, and serverless will grow far beyond that, realizing that trillion-dollar dream. If you're reading this and that hasn't happened yet, then you still might not agree. Just wait. This story has its uses. When we consider mapping, there are multiple methods to use them to create an advantage or an opportunity. For example, Method 1, you can use a map to see how components that are evolving can be combined to create new activities or to support your own efforts. If what you're doing is focusing on building something new in the uncharted area of the map, then you should note that whatever you do will be risky. It's the adjacent unexplored, an unknown area. In Figure 246, I've given an example in the mobile phone space where each higher order system combined underlying components with more industrialized technology. The map assumes a time frame of the early to mid-2000s. Obviously, these components have evolved since then. The play of combining industrialized components to expand into the adjacent unexplored with some new higher order activity is a high-risk stepping stone. You don't know what you'll find nor where it could lead next. It might be the next best thing since sliced bread, but the past is littered with failed concepts. The problem with Figure 246 is we always look back from the perspective of today and highlight the path by which success was achieved. There were other ideas, such as phones integrated with projectors, printers, firearms, umbrellas, clothing and even into a tooth, that have all been gone and quickly forgotten. See Figure 246, Combination Plays, for more details. In our case, we used our maps to anticipate future developments, including exchanges, assurance reporting, application marketplace, billing facilities and a brokerage service. Method 2, beyond removal of duplication and bias, you can also use a map to find efficiencies and constraints by examining links within the value chain. For example, take something as trivial as a desktop rollout. You might find that you're forced to treat the operating system as more of a product than a commodity, because some essential business application is tightly coupled to the operating system. By understanding and breaking this link, such as forcing the application into a browser, you can often treat a wide number of other components as a commodity. From our position, we understood that building data centers would be a constraint to building an IaaS play and that infrastructure was a constraint to building a PaaS. This also created opportunities, i.e. if one player launched in IaaS and became dominant, then competitors could launch equivalent services and use a price war to force up demand beyond the ability of the first mover to supply. This assumes that competitors had their wits about them. Given we had the underlying infrastructure technology known as Borg to do this, we could exploit such an opportunity. Method 3, another way is to take advantage of both evolution and inertia itself, for example by driving any component to a more evolved state, such as from product to commodity. These are potential gold mines, hence I tend to look at those components that are described as being in the product stage but are close to becoming a commodity. I look for those four factors: concept, suitability, technology and attitude, to exist in the market. I even double check by asking people. The problem here is that people who work in that space often have inertia to this idea and will tell you endless reasons why it won't work and this or that thing can't become a commodity. You want that inertia to exist because then all your competitors will have that inertia and equally dismiss the change, but you also want it to get to the truth of the matter. The question becomes, how do I find out whether it's really suitable for a shift to commodity when almost everyone in the field will tell me it isn't because of inertia? 2. Find out if something is viable. I cheat. I find a group of people familiar with the field and ask them to imagine we have already built such a service. I then ask them to write down exactly what it looks like and what it would need. The modern way of doing this is to get them to write the press release. If they can do this clearly, precisely and without recourse to hand-waving, then we've got something widespread and ubiquitous enough to be suitable for an industrialized play. Whichever method you use, aim to make this a stepping stone to a further play. For example, in the case of Zimki then, creating a utility service in the platform space and exposing it through APIs was a stepping stone towards running an ILC, ecosystem-like game. Open sourcing Zimki was simply a stepping stone to achieving an exchange with many providers. The play to open source Borg, our underlying infrastructure system, was a counterplay against any one competitor becoming dominant in the IaaS space. This idea of future possibilities through stepping stones is an important concept within strategy. If we look at the first method again, i.e. banking on recombination efforts in the uncharted space, then this is often a bad position to find yourself in. More often than not, it leads to a dead end, the phone firearm or the phone tooth. I tend to refer to these high-risk approaches as gambling rather than opportunities, because opportunities should expand your future possibilities and not reduce them. If you're going to gamble, then the only way to consistently make this work is to be lucky. Try instead not to gamble as much as focus on expanding future possibilities. Just because you could do something, doesn't mean you should do it. Strategy is as much about saying what you won't do as it is about what you will do. This is summed up in the highly mischievous phrase "opportunities expand as they are seized," which is often misinterpreted as "grab everything," which is precisely not what you should be doing. This is also why Fatango pivoted from a declining online photo service to a platform play, as it expanded our possibilities. See also Stuart Butterfield, who seems to have become a master of such pivots. This doesn't, however, guarantee success, as these are opportunities and not certainties.